Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Here We Go Again, Israeli Politics. Happy Thanksgiving and happy Hanukkah. This week will be a special interview with Ari Abramowitz. Take a listen.
Okay, we'd like to welcome our guest for this week's episode, Ari Abramowitz. Ari is the director of the Land of Israel Network and the founder of Arugot Farms, a beautiful farm in Judea and Samaria. Ari ran as well with Naftali Bennett in 2012 for the Knesset. Welcome, Ari. How are you?
Good to be here.
Good. Thank you for joining us. So we'll start off with really giving you the stand to tell us a little bit about you and what you do, and we'll go from some questions from there.
All right. I was born in 1979 in Houston, Texas. Not sure exactly where I was conceived, but that's neither here nor there. Came to Israel right after high school and went to yeshiva. Just fell in love with the land. Couldn't possibly leave. I just wanted to stay. A lot of negotiations, ended up going back to America for one semester, came back to Israel, went to the army, went to Bar Ilan University, briefly went back to America where I got stabbed in the back, burned and saw the World Trade Center come down, said this country is too crazy for me, ended up coming back to Israel. So just a year and a half since I was 18, and now I'm 41. I was in America for 1 year and a half, and then came back to Israel, and Jeremy and I, you know, my partner Jeremy Gimpel, he's also my commander in the army. And we're in Hasbara, a little bit like you guys, you know, just trying to share the truth and beauty of Israel with the world. So we had a radio show, we had a television show. People told us we were a little bit better faces for radio. And then, you know, Naftali Bennett was on one of our television shows and he invited us to run with him for Knesset. I'm just saying this now because in the introduction, you said I ran with Naftali Bennett, and that is not the most, it needs some commentary. It needs a little explanation there. So he asked us, he said, wow, you guys have a big following in the theater here. Why don't you run with me for Knesset? So we said, why not? It can't hurt. It could be fun. It wasn't really intending to actually get into the Knesset.
Well, you were pretty close.
We were close. But our idea was just to use the campaign as a platform to get the ideas out. Think about what you guys are doing, right? You have this podcast. You love doing it. You're able to open your souls up and share your love for Israel. So we just said, wow, it could be a new way to do that. And so we traveled the country from north to south. Just, it was also a cool thing for our own brains to try to synthesize, you know, actual policy with Torah, integrate the two and say, how would it manifest itself in a way that would be a Kiddush Hashem, that would be beautiful for the country. Anyways, we were one seat away from getting into Knesset. And it was a bracha for us that we didn't get in, for the country that we didn't get in. I don't think the Knesset is any place for a good Jewish boy to be. It's just, it lends itself to corruption. Unless you're very, very, very clear that you're not a politician, that you're a rabbi, or you're not there to be elected or to be in there. Because I saw when I got there, when we were running, I met all these different Knesset members, and I thought I was going to meet these, like, terribly corrupt people. And really, it was true. Many of them were terribly corrupt. But when they actually wanted to run for Knesset at the beginning, I think they wanted to do, from the left to the right, they wanted to do something good for Israel and the Jewish people. But they became so convinced in their mind that it's so important for them, Dafka, to be elected, that in order for them to be elected to do these great things that they really wanted to do, they needed to lie here or compromise there or lie here. And then by the time they're actually in the Knesset, they're liars and compromised people, no less than the compromised, corrupt politicians that they wanted to throw out and take their place. So when you just tell the simple truth, Hashem's in charge, the steering wheel of your life is Hashem's hands, and if you're supposed to be there, great, and if not, not. Anyways, I say that just to make it clear, I'm not a politician. I didn't run for the Knesset with Bennett. That's not exactly how it went. But either way, we finished that, then we went back into radio, and then we had an opportunity. It's a long story, but throughout the whole experience, we met these politicians with the head of Gush Etzion. His name was Davidi Perel. I don't know if you remember him. He sent originally Jeremy out here, and then Jeremy brought me out here to these mountains of the Judean frontier. It was like just really empty mountains, and we met these two guys that were trying to start this pioneering thing in these empty mountains, and they had just started paving roads and whatever, and we said, let's do this thing together. And now we have 4,000 fruit trees, 3 vineyards, an ecological garden of oasis-like swimming pool, an enchanting, mystical, spiritual Beit Knesset that we use to not only to daven in, but also just to, I mean, the purpose of the whole place is to make Judea into a global destination for spirituality and transcendence. That's what we want to do. And it's not even to make it, to return it to that. That's what it essentially is. People are going to the Bahamas, to an ashram in India, like for spirituality, when the capital of spirituality, the place where David HaMelech composed the Tehillim, is right here. Right? So we just need to reveal the essence of what the land itself already is, and that's what we've been doing.
Okay, beautiful. So, you know, before we get into the politics, you know, which is what our podcast is about, Israel and politics, what is it that you know, can you tell us a little bit more of the place that we're in? You know, just for our listeners, we just went on a beautiful tour, you know, with Ari around this place, and it's absolutely magnificent. But if you could share a little bit about the place itself.
So I'll share about the place, but, you know, you said before we get into the politics, I think in Israel, it's impossible to extract the politics from the spirituality, from the religiousness. It's really one integrated thing. You know, I could say, you know, Hebron belongs to the Jewish people. Someone would say, hey, keep politics out of this. Politics, that's like in Bereshit, you know, like, well, that's not politics. So we were sent out here originally. I think a lot of it had to do with strategic reasons, meaning that in the two mountains on the other side of Nahal Arugot that you saw, there's Meitzad and Pnei Kedem. And over here on the south side, southeastern side, there is Maale Amos and Ibei HaNachal. And that left this huge void here that would have been filled with the European Union sending millions of euros through these Arabs to build structures to capture more and more and more of Judea Samaria actually on the ground. So us coming in here served for southeastern Judea and Samaria what Judea and Samaria really serves as for all of Israel. Right, you know the story about Ariel Sharon is up in a helicopter with George W. Bush, and they're looking down at Yehudan Shomron. And Sharon says to Bush, without Judea and Samaria, or as you call it, the West Bank, Israel is 9 miles wide. And Bush says, 9 miles wide? We got driveways longer than that in Texas. It's impossible to defend a country that's 9 miles wide. So that's what our farm is here for this whole region. It's just critical for the safety and security of the region. Now, once I came out here and I was out here, I realized that this has nothing to do with Arabs or politics or security or strategy. The analogy I like to use is I felt like I was a fish flopping around on the riverbank, gasping for air, slowly dying. And someone comes and throws the fish back in the ground, in the water, and it says, oh, this is what it is to be a fish. I forgot what it was to be a fish. This is, so for me, being out here and living here, it's like, this is what it is to be a Jew. Maybe not for every Jew, but for me, this is what it is to be a Jew. And there's nothing more natural than and indigenous than a Jew in Judea. That's the reason we're called Jews. Who was the first Jew in the Tanakh that was called a Jew? Mordechai. Mordechai HaYehudi. But he was from the tribe of Benjamin. And he should have been called Mordechai HaYemani. Why Mordechai HaYehudi? Because he was Nigla from Yehuda. He was exiled from Judea. The reason Jews are called Jews, and that's why they call us settlers. And the settlements and the occupation. Get the settlers out of the West Bank is much easier to say than get the Jews out of Judea. Right? That's the reason that they call us by these names. But the world can have all of their lies and confusions, but we know what's true. You know what's true and you know what's true. And being here has just been a source of light, not only for us, but for the Arabs around us, for the non-Jews around us. We're like just a beacon of love and brotherhood and friendship. And in a region that is just swarmed by darkness and confusion, and there's just a lot of light coming out of here. So that's a little bit about the place.
So now, you mentioned that you, you know, in the end, you ran for Knesset, and you ran for politics. Now, you mentioned that you did not expect to get elected when you ran, although you did get very close in the end. And, you know, so you stated that your goal was to get your message and ideas out, okay? Now, with the fact that you did run for Knesset, what were those message and goals that you wanted to show in your political?
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember because it was like, what, 2012?
Mm-hmm.
And we're now almost 2022, so that's 10 years ago, right? So you were 9 years old, Binyamin, right?
Give or take.
So it was a long time ago, but I'm trying to remember. It was the pretty much a lot of the same things that we're trying to convey now. Jewish identity, Jewish education. I remember that when I was in the army, most of my unit had not even been to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem, right? And they're living in Haifa and Beersheba, and they don't know basics of Jewish history and Jewish identity. And so one of our messages was how to more involve and enroll exiled Jewry with Israel, that we felt like every Jew in the world has a real sense of ownership over Israel, should feel a sense of shayachut, a sense of belonging and ownership, and where their fate is intertwined with the fate of Israel. So we felt like there should be some way for them to vote in Israeli elections. Not in the most practical way, like yashar, a vote for a vote, but some way to get them involved with the hopes of actually getting them over here. You know, one of my passions has really been Aliyah. And it's not only because I feel like Israel is just a place of vibrance and vitality and joy and mission and purpose, and a Jew comes here. The truth is I've backed off the Aliyah thing because it's like a little bit of a big ask. What I do now is I just push for a year of what's it called? Like a sabbatical. You know, just come for a year. And then you could go back if you want to with the same purpose, because people come here and they're like, all right, I'm not making Aliyah, coming for a year. And then after being here for a year, it's like, well, you're going to go back. You can't go back once you've tasted the richness of life here. But just to get Jews over here, not just because of all the positives, but because also I feel like I can't shake it and I don't try to dodge it anymore. I feel like I look what's happening in America and around the world, and it is that ship is going under. And it's going to be a very, very, very dangerous place. I'm not just talking about spiritually and assimilation and intermarriage. That's one thing. I'm talking about actual, like, physical safety for Jews in the exile throughout the world. And I feel like it's, even if people think that you're an alarmist and a whack job and a crazy person, fine. They probably already think that about me. Let's just talk about what's really true. And I think it's so self-testifyingly true. The Jews are not safe in America, that once you say it, you sort of can't unhear it. You know, so that's a big part of the message. So we want to ingather the exiles. You know, and again, it's not for like religious and spiritual reasons, but just for like practical, real reasons. And settling the land, the importance of Jews like living in Judea and Samaria, the importance of Jews living anywhere in Israel, and settling the land and strengthening the Jewish presence of Israel, inspiring the world, trying to be a light unto the nations, doing outreach to other faiths, other religions, teaching Torah to other peoples and other faiths, not to convert them. We're not like a missionary religion, but just to share wisdom and beauty and truth. Okay, and we can learn from many of them also. But I think that that's an important thing. We don't need to have a posture of defensiveness all the time. We can have a posture of proactive, you know, we can replace the fear of the exile with love. We're in a place now where we can actually love and bless the world from a place of strength.
So you spoke on your own podcast in the beginning of June, right before the formation of this new government, that you would not, when you were discussing Bennett sitting with Lapid, you stated that you would not, quote unquote, have betrayed your values. Now, looking back, it's been around a few months since the formation of this government. What is your opinion of it?
Oh my goodness, was I a prophet or not? Right, Jeremy's like, I don't know. Like, no, there's a lot. Listen, first of all, I'm not a political guy. I was never a political guy. So I have, you know, political opinions, but they're not like, I feel a natural intuitive disgust with Naftali Bennett. Okay, I'm sure like in his heart, he's a good Jew and I love him and I would give my life to protect him. But I still feel like he really betrayed his nation, himself, more than anyone else. I think he betrayed himself, because he stood in front of the whole country and his constituents and said, I will not join a government with Lapid. I'm not a liar. My word is my word. And then literally he just bold-faced lied. What good can come from that? And however much he says, well, I wanted to save Israel from the chaos of another election, it's pretty obvious that he had his own ambitions and that he so badly wanted to have the prime minister title before his name, not realizing the titles are irrelevant in this world. Nobody will respect you because of a title, and that he's not a leader at all. He has, what, 6 mandates, and he's the prime minister of the country? And so to me, he has brought in literally Israel-hating Arabs that are part of his coalition, and we have our vineyards were about to be ripped up. Thank God we contacted Carolyn Glick and some media people, and they got out here and they've pushed off uprooting our vineyards because it's just over the blue line. It's not on, and no one is even claiming the land. Meanwhile, there are 350, forget vineyards and olive groves, Arab enclaves with structures and houses and dwellings way over the blue line. No, that's fine. That's fine according to Naftali Bennett. But our vineyards, that's a problem. Okay, so when you join a coalition that is so weak that you have leftists and Arabs that are holding it up, then is he really the leader? He's not. They say that this generation in the Talmud, right? It says that this leader, this generation will be the leadership of a dog. What does that mean? That your dog is walking ahead of you, but the whole time he's really looking backwards to see where you're going to walk, right? So it looks like our leaders are leading us, but they're not. He's not a leader at all. So I don't know if that answered the question, but what do I think of Naftali Bennett? I'm disgusted with him. Shem should bless him. He should have a good, healthy, happy life, but I do not think that he's prime ministerial material.
Now, that's nice on a character standpoint on Bennett himself. The question is more on the government's policy. Has there been a radical change, for the good or for the bad, that you've seen that's affected you?
Again, I'm not a political guy, so we may have to sort of dodge this question. I don't like the extreme, overwhelming coercion when it comes to the vaccines, right? I think that it's so over the top. People have gotten vaccinated once, and then twice, and now they're considered unvaccinated if they don't get a third vaccine. And his, like, the arrogance by saying, my patience is running out. Your patience is running out. Even if I wanted the vaccine, I now wouldn't get it just because Naftali Bennett is trying to strong-arm me into getting the vaccine. It seems so coercive, so authoritarian, and I'm shocked that there's not more of a pushback in this country, because we've seen what it's like in Jewish history when we just go like sheep, right? And that it's shocking to me that there's not more of a pushback. But the authoritarianism around the vaccine, and also his arrogance, but when Bibi was in charge, oh, I would be the best, I would fix this country, Bibi doesn't know what he's doing. And now he takes over and it's much, much worse. I don't necessarily think it's directly his fault, I think it's just the way the winds have blown. But at the same time, he's not any great messiah that everybody's like, it's a lot of the same stuff. A lot of the same stuff, plus the UN speech that he gave was underwhelming. A lot of the importance, I think, of Israel is actually in our words, in our ideas, in trying to spread inspiration and light. And it was lackluster and it was boring. And so that's a little bit disappointing. And he sat there sycophantically kissing up to Biden. And I thought that that was a little gross also, where he really should have been strong-arming Biden, who was just after the Afghanistan debacle. And he could have really capitalized on that for Israel. But instead, he just went back into that Israel-American puppet, where you're like just sycophantically kissing up to him. Anyways, I'm not a political guy. Those words will probably come back and haunt me someday. I'm just not intelligent enough to, put up filters.
So you already mentioned this, but part of the biggest fears of members, both from the left and from the right, was the precedent set by this government. They decided to sit with left-wing parties, far left-wing parties, including, for the first time ever, an Arab party, although it was koshered by the right-wing parties in the first place. The question is, where do you see this government's leading us with the fact that left-wing parties met with Abu Mazen, the different ministers are meeting with him, as we discussed earlier in this episode, and the fact that Ra'am puts out contradictory messages to this government? Where do you see this, how badly this situation can lead us?
I don't necessarily think it's going to be so bad for the country. I think before it can get too bad for the country, the coalition itself is probably going to deconstruct. It's just so, always constantly teetering. And, Ra'am is threatening to leave, and what Lieberman just threatened to leave if the Haredim join. And, he says that it's this broad coalition of unity, but it's really not. Nobody, I think, ever bought that. And there's just people that whose hatred for each other is just less than their hatred for Bibi Netanyahu. And so that's why they join together. But they can barely keep themselves together without deconstructing. So, and it says that, I just read some sort of poll right now that said that he's teetering on whether he would even pass the threshold if there were elections again, which is sort of bittersweet. Because I don't know how the heck he became prime minister. Right? When he ditched Bezalel Smotrich and the rest of his party to start a new party, I thought that was like a little bit of a perfidious backstabbing move. And then when he didn't get into Knesset and Smotrich did, I actually felt bad for Naftali Bennett. My heart hurt for him. He must have been really embarrassed, tossing and turning. I just pictured him at nighttime, in bed, in the fetal position, crying a little bit. What have I done? Now I'm never going to get, I've lost all of my luster. And now he's the prime minister? How the heck did that happen? It just makes me feel like this is all under Hashem's hashgacha. Because I remember when Prime Minister Olmert Remember how he became prime minister? Ariel Sharon had an aneurysm, and he was like the backup prime minister. He was number 23 on the Likud list, and he became prime minister. And it was like Hashem was like, right now, at this point in Jewish-Israeli history, we need the perfectly, deeply corrupt prime, the worst guy we can find right now for whatever reason. That's Ehud Olmert. Raise him to the top. That's how it feels with Bennett.
So, but that statement, and again, saying that it's all in Hashem's hand, it can be true, but that's, you know, in the end of the day, as you're just speaking, if, you know, to get from a place where you were not chosen at all for the Knesset, and you're in bed and you're crying to, you know, get within, what is it, 2 years to become prime minister, you don't think that shows character?
Character? No, that doesn't show character. It shows an extraordinarily fortunate twist of luck that he was able to capitalize on that by selling his entire character. I can only imagine how his parents feel. I mean, there's nobody that I talked to. I was really interested to see what if I'm the only one that has this revulsion to what he's done. So I ask a lot of people, not loaded, don't you hate Bennett? No, like, how do you feel about the government? There's not one person I've met that has any shred of respect for him. And so, sorry? Anyway, so remind me your question.
No,
does it show character? No, it shows zero character. I don't see any shred of character in Naftali Bennett, and that's not what I've always said. Meaning when I first met him, I really liked him. And I thought he was like a believer. I thought he was ideological. And you know what? Back then he may have been more than he is now. But the time between then and now, he must have just literally lost every shred of his integrity that he would have sold the country out like that. So no character there.
So my issue with your statement is not, you know, there's two separate things. There's one idea of what the government's doing and whether or not you believe the government is not functioning well. And as we've mentioned in many times in our podcast, bashing many things that are happening that are incorrect now and that are hard. And that's one thing. And the other part is, you know, your original statement of, you promised A and then you did B, right? You promised you wouldn't go together and then you ended up going on promises. And now, whether or not that is true, and that definitely happened, but if you actually sit and map out the promises of all the parties pre-elections, it may, you know, just sat down and did a mishmash of things, you'll see that it's physically impossible in any, no matter what mandates you give any parties, their government cannot be formed if everyone kept their promises. So now the answer to that could be, and I'd love to hear your thinking, is it you shouldn't have promises in the first place? It should just be theoretically illegal, no making promises before you run? Or is there a problem with the system? Because if everyone kept their promises, there would never be a government.
I would say it's like the difference between cheating on your wife with another woman or telling your wife that you were good on your diet today, but you really had a slice of pizza, right? They're both lies. But they're of tremendously different scale, okay? One is betraying your wife and the fundamental marriage vow, and the other one is cheating on your diet and not telling your wife that you had pizza. That's the difference, I think, between Naftali's foundational promise of not entering a coalition. He created an entire government. It's not just a little promise that he broke. It's a foundational promise that created an entire leftist Arab government. So yeah, a lot of people lie in their campaign promises, but that one was pretty bold. That one was pretty, you know, like insulting to the country.
Okay, now to we're getting to wrapping up here. And originally you were stating a beautiful sentence about the fact that a good Jew doesn't become a politician. Mm-hmm. And my question to you that is, then who does become politicians? Now, let me be clear. I can accept and agree that if you are a good Jew, then if you go become a politician, you'll probably be less of a good Jew. That's fair. But as someone who, in the end, needs these 120 Knesset members to run my country, I believe I'd still prefer for the good Jew to be running the country. Not about Naftali Bennett right now. We're talking about all Knesset members be good Jews than rather have the non-good Jews become Knesset members.
So the answer to that would be, it's really an issue of semantics. I remember of Meir Kahana. Right, he was in politics, but he would say, I am not a politician. Right, what's the job of a politician? To get elected. Right, but what did Rav Meir Kahana say? He said, I'm a rabbi. Okay, I'm not a politician. Right, I'm a rabbi that is in politics because politics is part of my service of Hashem and my service for the Jewish people, so this is where it's led me. But either vote for me or don't vote for me, but my goal here is not to be elected. So when I say a good Jew shouldn't be a politician, I don't mean a good Jew shouldn't go into politics. There's a lot of good Jews in politics right now. But I don't think that they should ever be a politician. Because a politician, it has certain connotations for a reason. And that is to perpetuate and maximize your success to get elected to as high a position as possible. That should not be the goal. The goal should be to lead with honesty and integrity and for the good of the Jewish people. And if it means that you have to drop out of the Knesset or not be elected because you're going to tell the truth, that's what you do. That's what I meant by that.
Wonderful. And to finish off, you know, we came out here to this beautiful place and sat down and had a wonderful afternoon with you. What would you like to say to our listeners? What do you think is really you'd love for them to hear or know, if it's about this place, if it's about you, how they can help?
So I think one of the big messages is that Israel is, right now people think about Israel and they think primarily about either terrorism or the Arabs or the conflict or about politics. But it says that the chicken grows as the egg decays, right? That's what it says in the Zohar and Kabbalah. That from the outside, you see a lot of this politics and terrorism, but on the inside, something really beautiful is coming alive, is blossoming here. There's tremendous amounts of light and spirituality and chesed and joy, and it's something you could only really experience when you're here in the land itself, breathing the air, walking on the earth. So one thing is to get over here to Israel and experience it, and don't trust, you know, J-Post, Times of Israel, and whatever things. You're not really getting any sort of inspiring beauty about Israel from there. Another thing is Jeremy and I were doing this thing called the Fellowship. I was telling you guys about that. You can see it on our website. Can I say what our website? Thelandofisrael.com. And we have a fellowship. We have hundreds of people around the world who could join us every week that want that. They want, you know, you guys are talking politics. And by the way, it's good that there are good Jews like you guys that are really wanting to share a different perspective, because you look at Times of Israel and J-Post and people think that's the spectrum, and it's really not. So kol hakavod to what you guys are doing. Our thing is nearly primarily spiritual. We talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on in Israel, but we're talking about the holidays and the Torah portion and prayer and trying to just create it's almost like a virtual Beit Knesset. You know, it started during Corona when people couldn't go to synagogue. And now we have this sort of synagogue online where people from all different faiths, unbelievably, are coming together, different religions, different politics, different, and they're all coming together, and it's just become very magical. So that's a big part of what we're doing. And so everybody's invited to that, and come to Israel. And you want to reach out to me, email address, Ari, that's A-R-I, Strudel, right, the @, Ari @thelandofisrael.com.
Ari, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.